The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.
Okay, it's Thursday at 1 o'clock, and you are tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to the Farm Report. And I'm here in studio with Stuart Borowski, Union Square's grassman. Stuart, it's so great to have you in the studio today. How's it going?
Oh, it's going really well. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Awesome. So before our guests get too excited and think we're going to do a show about marijuana, which, you know, we should do, let's talk about what kind of grass you're growing.
Well, it's a grain grass. So it's a cereal. And basically, they lend themselves to being grown anywhere because they grow very quickly. And so we decided to kind of work on a plant that takes care of us in a week.
Oh, nice. So have you been a grass man your whole life, or is this a new project for you?
Well, I've been at the Union Square Farmers Market for 17 years.
Wow.
But I actually worked as a truck driver, and I worked in parks. I did landscaping and delivery with other kinds of food before that.
And where is your farm located?
Well, at this time, we're renting a warehouse down near the Gowanus part of Brooklyn.
So you're farming right here in the city?
Yeah. Yeah, we're an urban farmer.
Awesome. So tell me, you know, it's like 17, 18 years ago, you're out on the road driving trucks. You're like, man, this sucks. I want to get out of this life. Was it immediately obvious that you would start growing grass, or kind of how did that transition happen?
Well, it was an evolution. I decided that I wanted to do something that was more meaningful and productive than just delivering stuff, even though it's a totally important thing to do. And I went out west and decided that I wanted to become a commercial fisherman. But as fate would have it, I ended up working on an organic farm, actually a permaculture farm, which means mixed agriculture. And the guys that I worked with were not only into working and into producing food, but were also into kind of like this philosophy of taking care of the plants, and the plants would take care of you. And that really struck me as being very valid. And I decided to move back to New York and focus on working for somebody on the East Coast. I ended up working on a fish farm because that was my interest. And when that proved to be kind of not enough, I ended up going down to the Union Square Farmers Market and working for some of the farms there, as well as the fish farm. Also at that time, I started working for one of the wheatgrass growers who supplies the restaurants in New York City. And eventually I put all of those kind of things together and started growing the wheatgrass up on one of these farms that was going to the market, bringing it in that way. And after establishing myself there, eventually started my own business.
That's awesome. So the location of the farm in Gowanus, is that been the location from the beginning, or have you guys moved a little bit?
No, that's actually, it's the third room that we've been working in. Yeah.
So what in the past has caused the farm moves?
Well, the first move was, you know, for traditional reasons. We had tried to grow the wheatgrass, and it was growing well, but there were some obvious defects in the room and things that could make my life a lot easier. And I just decided, okay, we need to get our own space rather than sharing it with the other farmer. And this is going to help me to focus on the production and to the exclusion of these other stuff, you know, the fish. But after that, I realized that we were up in Monticello. It's two and a half hours drive, and we started doing more markets. And at that point, I realized that I really couldn't replace the time spent going back and forth, and that the product that I was specializing in was really could be grown anywhere, especially indoors. And so I decided to move down to Brooklyn about 10 years ago.
Okay, so you set up camp in Brooklyn. You have a indoor. So is it a greenhouse, or is it different than a greenhouse?
No, it's been my experience with wheatgrass that because it's so temperature sensitive, and the happiest temperature I found anyway seems to be between 65 and 70, and most greenhouses are a little bit warmer than that. And so we decided to do them indoors, similar perhaps to mushrooms or other kind of organism where basically you don't really need dirt per se, you don't really need sunlight per se, you just need to have a very stable environment.
So the wheatgrass, it likes to be in a 65 to 70 degrees. It does grow in dirt though, right? Or what are you growing the seeds in?
We do plant in soil, and that's, both because intuitively it's going to be a better product and also because that's the way I was taught to grow the wheatgrass. On the other hand, the most important thing for the wheatgrass is that it think that it's in the place it expects to be, which is basically in an upland arid area in the spring. And so what that translates into is about, it's basically like Montana, Colorado, Saskatchewan, I'm sure there's places all over the temperate zone that would be great for growing wheat. The other parts of the requirements for wheatgrass are met, but you can do that like as components.
So have you found it helpful to sing like prairie songs, like Old Susanna? Or, are there any particular tunes?
Hi-ho, hi-ho, the Seven Dwarves song probably is the most appropriate because it's piecework, and it also needs to be done not only, it needs to be done ahead of time, but somehow on schedule. And so to a certain extent, it's the rotational nature of being a wheatgrass farmer that would, that dictates the spirit of it.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk about that. You said the grass grows, it goes from seed to a sellable product in under a week?
Yes. Basically, we're trying to sell it before it gets old. We're trying to sell it at the point where it's already assumed some of the nutritional makeup of a green vegetable, but still retains the wheat germ and the whole grain aspects of the seed.
Okay, so give us a sense of like what is a week in the life of a wheatgrass farmer look like. Now I know you're doing four markets a week, and if people want to find your stuff, they can find you at Union Square on Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. I have to say you're very recognizable. What is up with the bus?
We used to run out of my little truck, and then I got a bigger van, and then I went to buy another van, and it was a school bus. And although I bought it out of desperation, it was an immediate hit with everybody. And the truth is, although we've had to change it so it's not really an official looking school bus, we've still got it a nice snazzy yellow. And I don't know, everyone just seems to have a very positive connection with it. Also, as of now, nobody else is using a bus like that. And so in a crowded market on a busy day, it's nice to be, able to be found.
Yeah, and so at Union Square, you guys are on Union Square West between 16th and 17th most days of the week?
Yeah, generally we're on the west side either across from the Heartland Brewery or a little bit further south by the coffee shop. We've been very fortunate to have been in these spots for a while, and you can also find us at our website. You go there and you can see a picture of, where we set up.
Awesome. What's the website?
It's unionsquaregrassman.com.
Awesome.
And yeah, it's pretty.
All right. So back to, I guess, my original question. Take us through, what's a week look like? How are you planning out the crops? Are there busier days? Like, how much attention does the grass need? Are you setting your alarm for 2 a.m. to go and like whisper sweet nothings? Or, what's the scenario?
Basically, because of my market schedule, I have a kind of a farm day and kind of a market day. And the market days are more intense. I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, Saturday morning at 3. And between the time I get up and 7 o'clock in the morning, I have to go to the warehouse. I have to take care of the dogs. I have a couple of dogs who live there. And then I have to basically make sure the plants are okay, make sure the juice machines are cleaned and loaded on the truck, make sure the truck has everything it's going to need as far as supplies, and then determine what I believe I'm going to need to sell that day, pull that from the room, rearrange the rooms, do any other final planting, and then load the racks onto the bus. Make sure everything's square in the shop, and check the email just to make sure there's no last-minute orders. And I got to get to the market by 8 o'clock, but actually, as the season progresses, we should be set up, actually, by 7:30, and so these hours kind of dial back. The day goes with barely a chance for errands, unless if it's raining, in which case there's plenty of time to read a book. But otherwise, and the day goes until 6 o'clock at least. We pack up at 7, and then it's kind of winded down in the exact opposite way. So the day could kind of go. I consider myself working when I walk in the shop, and so my day can go 4:30 to 9 or longer on a Saturday. It's and the thing is that that requires real management of personal energy, but also it really requires management of product and people, even though sometimes I work by myself, sometimes I have a couple of guys who help me at the market. And it's super important because the business itself, of course, is not steady. People come at lunchtime, people come after work. You have to make sure that you're prepared to take care of them, even if you're having a difficult day or if the grass is having a difficult day. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, it loves 65 degrees and we sell outside. So it can range far from that. You have to make sure the grass is watered or not frozen or not being enjoyed by the birds and the squirrels. And that's a market day, and the focus is on people and making the money. And then the other 3 days are basically about trying to spend as much time as I can with my family and doing the planting and taking care of the animals.
Cool. So where are you getting the seeds from? Like, what does that look like? And how does that seed supply kind of affect your business in the grass?
Well, the seeds are one of the trickier aspects of the business, because the seeds need to be chemical free and certified organic, but the seeds are prone to many different common varieties of mold, as well as some stuff that's specific to wheat.
Okay.
And so we get the seeds from out west by the pallet, because we need them all to be from the same lot, and that's the only affordable way to ship them. Also, it's been my experience that the seeds that are grown here are the time that you harvest the wheat out west lends itself to mold-free seeds.
Okay.
The seeds that are available and that have been grown on the East Coast, and of course, you know, this is a generalization, but are generally harvested in the fall, and it's a little bit wetter. There's more moisture in the air. If they're not properly if they're not given a fungicide, sometimes they can get moldy to the extent that they're not going to be bad for eating. They're going to be great for bread, but they don't make good wheatgrass.
Okay.
So that's why we source our seeds from out west.
So the farm inputs, essentially, you have the seeds that you're buying. What else do you need to grow? I mean, water, right?
Right. We use the city water system. I actually have a great faith in the system. We also had a test originally, but the real trick to city water is put your own pipes in. So that's what I did.
Okay.
We use soil that's bagged. We use that for convenience as well as cost. That's expensive to get delivered, unless if you get it by the tractor trailer load. So we get it by the tractor trailer load. And that comes from a plant in Connecticut. It's topsoil. It's neither the lowest nor the fanciest grade of soil. And it's just been the stuff that we find that has been screened enough to use properly. When I was upstate, in the country, one of the great things is we could reuse our soil. We don't actually have a way to do that directly. We donate our used agricultural waste, as you would say, our compost, to the added value program in Red Hook, Brooklyn.
Oh, great. Yeah, the farm.
Yeah, they've been super supportive. And that was, you know, there's ups and downs about everything. And one of the things about urban agriculture is you're space restricted. And that compost operation takes quite a bit of space. And so we've been very lucky to have kind of had their support in that way.
All right. And then you have, what are you growing in? You have different pallets or tins?
Yeah,
or
we source containers from a greenhouse supply company. This business is basically an amalgam of a traditional greenhouse nursery business and a grain production. And so it's kind of like a nice marriage. There's always someone who's interested in helping me out with a new idea, and they're definitely happy to sell me the little nozzle or spigot that I think I need.
The right tool for the right job. Yeah,
yeah, sure.
So your warehouse is located in Gowanus. I mean, that neighborhood has seen a lot of changes over the last 10 years. I mean, have you noticed your business being affected? Or, I mean, you said you have dogs there. Are they guard dogs? Like, what's the vibe over in the neighborhood? Do people, if we walk by, would we know what was happening behind those closed doors?
Well, only if you get there early in the morning when I'm loading the truck, or late at night when I'm unloading it. Everything goes on inside, and that's partially for anonymity. It's very difficult to kind of conduct your business and also take care of the work at the same time. So we like to separate that. But also the truth is that when I moved there 10 years ago, the neighborhood was just coming out the neighborhood was one of the last to benefit from the increased policing that the 90s, you know, gave to New York City.
Okay.
And so we're in the kind of neighborhood and on the kind of street where, because it's only houses on one side, the other side feels a little bit more vacant and abandoned. And even though it's not, and it's within full view and under streetlights, originally it was the kind of place where I was happy to have my two big dogs. And now, even though it kind of nobody has changed, but it's much safer because the general neighborhood has changed. I still scold people when they walk into my door because it's a big dog
right
kind of neighborhood. You should always knock.
Right.
You
right,
know, but right. But the truth is my dogs are sweethearts, and I've been very fortunate to never have a serious problem there. On the opposite, it's one of those things that, because it's an industrial neighborhood, it lends itself to deliveries. It has the kind of space that would lend itself to indoor agriculture.
Okay.
It has the kind of neighbors that are used to odors and noises compared to a body shop. I'm a very quiet and rosy smelling operation.
Everybody loves the grass, man.
Yeah, sure, sure. So occasionally it smells like compost. That's fine, you
right.
know. And so that's great. It's been a real good marriage, I believe, between me and the neighbors, who are very sweet and very protective of their block, and at the same time recognize that we work very hard there, and they have, you know, that's their background also.
Awesome. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll jump back into some more wheatgrass talk.
Great.
Public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Hot Grease strives to bring sustainability, localized sourcing, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folk. Each week, Nicole Taylor's conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from internationally renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget looking to impress their tiniest critics. Again, that's every Monday at 3:30 p.m., Hot Grease on the Heritage Radio Network.
Okay, we are back. You are tuned into the Heritage Radio Network, and you're listening to the Farm Report. We are broadcasting live from the back of Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm in studio with Stuart Borowski, the Union Square Grassman, and we are talking wheatgrass. So, Stuart, we talked a little bit in the first half of the show about your farming operation and the pretty unique fact that you're an urban farmer. When I was trying to like think about it during the break, is there anyone else at market who's growing exclusively, you know, in the five boroughs? It seems like you're kind of an anomaly.
There aren't too many of us, although the truth is there was an Asian woman who is growing mushrooms indoors, and that's an excellent thing to do in the city. And there is the Queens County Farm Museum, and they have an outdoor operation, like a more traditional operation, but I'm pretty sure that they're also doing indoor stuff and, you know, growing greens under hoop houses. And I think there is this trend toward small animal farming, because that's also something that even if you're in the country, you'd be doing inside. But I'm not really sure that there's another, you know, family farmer who's actually kind of like paying the rent and buying the food with the proceeds of the farm.
Right, right in Brooklyn. I know that's always like the crazy thing. You know, like walk up, where's your farm? Sackett Street. Like, all right, here we go. So let's talk a little bit about your stand. You guys sell the wheatgrass. So how do people buy wheatgrass? What do they do with it?
Well, we've been selling the wheatgrass for three purposes. We sell it as an edible, we sell it for pets to eat, and we sell it as a decorative item. It's the kind of grass that's only good for 2 or 3 weeks, and this is really good for us as a business. It lends itself to repeat sales.
Sure.
So as a decoration, of course, it's not going to be a year-round thing. It's what they call like an installation. But we do a lot of trade shows, and we do some hotels or restaurants. They do centerpieces for weddings, that kind of thing. Our biggest item is probably the traditional item, the wheatgrass juice. And this is the way that most people hear about wheatgrass, because it's this wonderful food and it's also prepared in a unique way. You don't really eat it because it's so fibrous. So we mostly end up taking care of people who want wheatgrass juice by actually juicing it for them. Although we also sell the grass for them to juice at home, because it requires this kind of process. We end up doing a lot of that. And finally, we sell the wheatgrass to people with pets. Grasses and other greens are very helpful for all the animals, and when you live in New York, very often your pets don't have access to that kind of thing. So
someone who's buying for their cat or their dog, let's say they buy a little, you know, potted disc of wheatgrass, and then what, the dog just nibbles on it, the cat nibbles on it? Like, how does that work?
It's been my experience that the animals actually have an instinct to eat grass, and indeed when people drink the juice themselves, they remember eating grass as children. So it's got a very distinctive odor, and it seems that most animals will know not only to try it, but also to eat it when they have digestive issues. Of course, there's a whole set of herbivores, there's a whole set of animals that will eat grass for food, and so you really end up hitting all the bases. We say if it walks or flies, it eats wheatgrass, and I guess that left out fish.
Okay. So, yeah, not a lot of grass underwater, or not a lot of wheatgrass anyway. So as far as making the juice, talk a little bit about that. How much grass do you need to make how much juice? Is this like a venti latte situation, or?
Well, the truth is because we're selling it as a food, the more wheatgrass juice you drink, the more nutrition you've got. But we do serve very small cups of juice because it's a very concentrated juice, and because it's got this strong green effect, it's a strong green flavor. Nonetheless, we still go through quite a few of these tiny cups. It takes maybe a couple of handfuls of grass to fill a small cup of juice, and that's why in the end you end up needing to grow quite a bit to serve a market.
And how much, in an ideal world where we're all getting as much grass as we want and need, what do you recommend for people? What's kind of the norm? Or
the recommendations that I've heard are basically between 2 and 4 ounces a day, perhaps drinking them first thing in the morning, or perhaps, through the morning hours. But of course, that's the kind of generalization that you would want to really understand before you started, hewing to it like an orthodoxy. The truth is that when people are cleansing, they may drink quite a bit of wheatgrass and nothing else. Whereas if you're eating a lot of other greens, I don't think that you, quote unquote, need to have any particular amount. But it's very good to have a varied diet that focuses on greens and grains. And that's why wheatgrass is not only healthy, but works with a lot of the other healthy foods. I do at least 2 ounces a day. I mean, I can't brag too much because it's all around me all the time, so it's easier for me to put that into my life. But that being said, it is so healthy, and it does, give me a lot of energy. And I think if I was a bigger person, maybe 2 ounces wouldn't be enough.
So tell me, how is your grass? I see there's juice bars kind of popping up around the city. I think you can go into Whole Foods, and there's always this option to add a wheatgrass shot to your smoothie or your power, whatever. How does that grass compare to your grass? What are kind of some of the main differences there?
Well, the wheatgrass can grow well in a certain set of climate conditions, and if it doesn't grow well, it's not really going to have the same kind of nutrition, the same kind of good flavor. That's because the plant actually has to work harder to stay healthy and alive. So what we're doing is we're really kind of babying the grass. If you grow it in a greenhouse, the sun will rise and set in our room, it's light all the time. The plant never has to shift back and forth from blade growth to root growth. So there are cultivation differences. There's mm-hmm. also basically once the grass is harvested, it can stay fresh in a refrigerator, but if not stored properly, you can see the quality and the color degrade. And finally, I think that if you go to a juice bar that doesn't have a lot of turnover, it's possible that the juice that you're drinking might have actually been kind of made already, or maybe there's some other, you know, it's difficult to do wheatgrass really fresh if you're not either doing it at home or doing a lot of volume.
Okay, and so you wouldn't want to, like, juice a gallon of wheatgrass to have in your fridge, like a gallon of orange juice where you're pouring yourself a glass every morning.
No, I'm not really trained as a nutritionist, but as I understand it, the alkaline juices don't really hold their nutritional value in the way that an acidic or a fruit juice will. And that's why even a lot of vegetable mixes will have become acidified through the addition of tomato juice or some other sort of fruit. So for wheatgrass or for any sort of green juice, I believe within 20 minutes is the right time to drink it.
To come by for your shot of wheatgrass.
Yeah. Yes. The thing about magic is magic is never easy.
Okay.
So the truth is for magic to really work, it either needs to be special or it needs to be expensive or it needs to at least be inconvenient. And so, you know, so yeah, the best way to get the magic wheatgrass is to actually just truck on out to Union Square or alternately, as I say, get the grass yourself and set a machine up at home. And that's what many people who either are dedicated to nutritional health or have some sort of health crisis, they'll go that way.
What can you talk? I mean, you talked a little bit about this, but can you talk a little bit more about, you know, what does it taste like and how does the grass change? You know, you're at the market year round, so is winter grass and summer grass, you know, do you notice much fluctuation from day to day or season to season?
Well, the goal of my business is to prevent any fluctuation in the quality, and that's not only to keep the customer's experience, you know, but also to maintain the proper yield and the profit. Nonetheless, in the summer, we have to harvest it earlier because it grows quicker and because it can get moldy. Even if we do a good job of growing it, it has to go to market. It could be warm in the truck. And in the wintertime, sometimes we have to harvest it short because people want it and it just hasn't had enough time to grow.
Right.
But that being said, the wheatgrass itself is only going to be harvested in a spring stage. By the time the wheatgrass would get to be a true summer wheat plant, it would no longer be good for juice. It would be a tall grain. It would have put all of its energy into the seeds and the roots. And so basically, for us, you know, it's always springtime.
So if I bought like a little pot of wheatgrass from you and I brought it home and put it on my, you know, kitchen table, what is it, will it grow forever if I don't eat it? I mean, what's going to happen to that?
If you give the grass a little water every day, it'll grow for 2 or 3 weeks. But during that time, it's trying to turn into a mature wheat plant.
Okay.
And that's about wheat plants about the size of a corn plant. And when you look at the grass in the container and
it
then
looks
imagine
a lot smaller than that.
And it has big ambitions bigger than that 3.5-inch square, you know.
But so kind of in order for it to like reach its like its full potential, you'd probably need to replant it, or you know, it'd need a different climate and
exactly.
soil, and it's not
exactly.
going to go from. It's not going to turn into a, you know, a full-grown wheat plant in your pot on your living room table.
You would almost certainly need to give it outdoor conditions, because not only are we preserving the nutritional aspect of the wheatgrass by babying it, but on the other hand, we're really not letting it prepare itself to go to maturity.
Okay.
You'd be much better served to take a plant that's actually properly hardened off and used to a normal temperature and light cycle. This wheatgrass is a wheat farmer would look at it and say, well, it's kind of tall and thin.
Right.
You know, because it hasn't had a chance to broaden out. It hasn't had a chance to grow those roots. And the truth is side by side, you'd just be better off planting directly into the garden.
Okay. So you sell at the farmer's market. You're there 4 days a week. And then you do some trade shows, you said. And you also do restaurant sales. Who are the restaurants that you're selling to?
We've been very fortunate to be at the Union Square Farmers Market because the restaurants come there and they look at the food, they see the quality, and they make their choices based on that. So we've been selling to ABC Kitchen. They're right up the block. We've been selling to Mary Cleaver. We sold to Jiva Mukti, the yoga studio. We were selling our sunflower sprouts to Angelica's for a while. And, you know, basically, even though we're not able to deliver because it's just me and these kids that are helping me, on the other hand, being at this locus of food interest and food quality has really helped us to get into the higher quality restaurants, I think.
That's great. So we are out of time. I just want to give people another shout out to the website. If they want to find you, you're at Market, like we said, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday from 8 to 5-ish.
From 8 to 6.
8 to 6-ish. Yeah, yeah.
Even,
all right.
Even later in the summer.
And they can come by and they can get, you know, juice to drink there, grass to take home. You also do the buckwheat sprouts, pea shoots.
We're doing several different kinds of greens harvested for salad. We've recently started juicing our pea shoots as well. We're making a vegetable juice that's just really killer. And we're also, of course, selling the grass plants to people who are giving them to their pets. And our website, unionsquaregrassman.com, is a great way to see the latest thing that was on my mind at 4:30 in the morning, or alternately to email me and tell me to hold something for you, you know, that kind of thing.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming down today. It was great to have you on the show.
Oh, I really appreciate it, Erin. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with the Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of 6 provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the 6 features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network.